broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Cool, you look like fool to me.
My appetite was gone. When I got back home, my niece informed me what was
we picked August 28th. It was open in my schedule.
Oh, I'm feeling okay. It was a little bit nerve-wracking.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast.
Epic fail.
A news talk and a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch. And every night we'll take you through the looking glass to find that and more and beyond. And our website, philhendryshow.com. This is where you go to get, oh my goodness gracious, live streaming video of the show, all kinds of archive, 5-day archive of our video. We've got character bits. We've got everything, man. We got our webisodes. We have TV pilots we've been involved in, the history of the show, the future of the show, the Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. You got to have a backstage pass. Otherwise, you're missing like 75% of what's going on around here. Well, maybe not that much. Robert Leonard joining me along with Bud Dickman this hour as we talk in our news hour. We will also have Doug Danger on to talk with us about Rolling Stone's top Beatles songs. I don't know what possessed them, you know.
Well, the Beatles are important.
Yeah, I know, but all of a sudden, out of the blue, hey, what are the top Beatles songs? Why now?
Because it's the anniversary, isn't it?
Anniversary of what?
It's like the anniversary of when they came out.
Who? The Beatles?
Yeah.
No, they didn't, man. They came out in like they came to the States in 64. It's the 40th anniversary of Let It Be.
I don't know what that is.
That's one of their albums. It's the 40th anniversary of Let It Be. Okay. So we'll look at that, and when we have Bud has the Bud Dickman Nightly News later on tonight as well. Now, there was an interesting event in the broadcast world. It had to do with Ed Schultz, but it's not really a news story because I suspect it's been misreported like a mother. I mean, I don't think the way they reported this, I don't think it went down this way.
Yeah, but I mean, they said that he started bawling and everything.
I don't think he started bawling. Here's the story. MSNBC talk show Screamer. See, this is the New York Post reporting this, and they are I guess kind of a conservative newspaper. But the Huffington Post also reported this and reported it equally biased against Ed Schultz. And as I said before the show, when I was talking, we do an hour uncensored pre-show on video for our subscribers. I said, you know, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, the face of television news and the face of talk radio and the face of commentary everywhere is that there's conservatives and there's liberals, and the conservatives all get along really good and the liberals all get along really good, and they go and they hang out with each other, you know.
Yeah, well, they probably do have a drink or something.
Well, maybe they got a drink every now and again, man, but the fact is, behind the scenes, everybody is trying to kill everybody else because this is called making a living, man. Everybody's competing. Ed Schultz is a liberal. And let's say, who? Okay, Keith Olbermann's a liberal. But Ed Schultz, he don't have any love for Keith Olbermann. They agree politically, but they hate each other's guts, probably, if Keith Olbermann ever even thinks about Ed Schultz. That's what the whole point of this story is about. Ed Schultz had a meltdown in the network's 30 Rock newsroom, shouting at staff, "I'm going to torch this bleeping place."
I wonder when they say bleeping, what it is.
Bud, you mean you win every time you hear some guy say bleeping, you're wondering what it is.
Yeah, it's always kind of curious to me. What do you say, like the S?
The S? That wouldn't make any sense.
Come on, man, you know that it was an F.
Oh, yeah, but it's always kind of amusing to me.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So I'm a retard.
Hey, look, man, you're not supposed to use that word.
I mean,
just never mind. Yeah, you're right. It's very interesting, and I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, sure.
The hot-tempered anchor of The Ed Show lost it during a phone call in the packed studio and slammed down the phone before exploding. As astonished MSNBC staff members fell silent, Schultz glared around the room and yelled, "Bleepers." Now, I don't know whether that's MFers or effers.
Probably effers.
See, I don't think it was effers, because nobody says effers anymore. They say MFers.
Yeah. So you, man, you all jacked up.
I don't know, but I think it's fascinating.
Boy, you really get your kicks, man, with some weird stuff.
You don't. Well, what did he say?
I don't care, man. It doesn't matter. He said something obscene. He was angry. That's the point. He was angry. He slammed the phone down. He said, I'm going to torch this place. Now, what was he angry about? A witness told the New York Post, quote, Ed was furious that the network was running election night promos and he wasn't in them. He'd been arguing on the phone with marketing. Then he slammed down the phone and exploded. It was like Mel Gibson had entered the newsroom. Fuming, Schultz was immediately, quote, dragged in for a meeting with NBC News President Steve Capus and MSNBC President Phil Griffin following his August 12th meltdown. August 12th is when this happened. It's now making it to the New York Post. Why? Because these guys can't wait to report on something, anything, that they think is going to be interesting, because most of the stuff they put in their newspaper, no one wants to read. One source added, Schultz was told, if you do that again, you are fired. He broke down crying. By the way, folks, as I read this to you, I don't believe this story. I believe that he got angry. I believe he went into a meeting. I believe he might even have cried. But I don't believe that it is for the reasons being given here. I think the reasons being given here were given to the New York Post by some staffer who probably couldn't find their ass with both hands, has never been in a meeting between talent and management, and probably has got a problem with Ed Schultz to begin with, probably hates his guts and wants to spin it real, you know, real bad for Ed. And why do I think that? Because this just smells like it, man. First of all, newspapers don't know anything, and I mean nothing, about the environment of broadcasting. They know nothing about it. They think they do, they don't. They'd love to know. Half those cats wish they had a show. Those guys writing newspaper articles, those guys that do newspaper columns, they can't believe all the power got pulled from them and now it belongs to some guy on television. It just drives them crazy. All right, anyway, one source added, Schultz was told, if you do that again, you're fired. He broke down crying. Yeah, bullcrap. Sources say the hothead was pushed over the edge by MSNBC's catering to bullying fellow anchor Keith Olbermann and its focus on golden girl Rachel Maddow. A second MSNBC source says Ed never gets any attention and love it. He finally snapped. Schultz, who's fronted his 6 p.m. show on MSNBC for 16 months, also doesn't hold back on his radio show. He once told White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, you're full of crap. And after Fox News Channel's Glenn Beck revealed a condition that may make him go blind, Schultz said it's a travesty. He's not going to see the country he's trying to destroy. And a spokeswoman for Schultz and the network declined to comment on the incident, but said, quote, the only thing that's on fire are Ed's ratings and the only people crying are at CNN. All right. So that's probably some kind of a comment that Ed's numbers went up against the CNN competition. In probably a number of categories. The only people crying are CNN. Maybe Ed was crying about, who knows, maybe he's just upset. I don't doubt the guy's pissed off that MSNBC's not giving him any love. And the reason why they're not giving you any love, Ed, is because your show sucks. You know.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, why does somebody want to talk about the truth? You know.
Well, I'm saying it, you know, but I'm just, I also want to give the guy the benefit that he wasn't crying like a baby and he wasn't, you know, dragged into a meeting. They're going to drag the talent. They're going to say, hey, Ed, would you mind, you know, sure. And he was probably very frustrated and angry, and maybe people thought he was crying. But, yeah, they're probably not giving him love because the show blows. You wonder why MSNBC put him on the air, and then you realize, well, that's their sort of their Glenn Beck move. And it's another one of those moves. You go, geez, boy, those cats are stupid. NBC. How stupid. So that's why, Ed, you're a nice guy, I'm sure, but your TV show blows just herds of buffalo, and Olbermann is the man, as irritating and psychotic as he is, and Rachel Maddow, she's the man, and I mean,
yeah,
she's the woman, and so that is what that is. So, but I don't think this guy was bawling like a baby. And I think this, you know, it's one thing to kick a guy when he's down. I think it's a hell of a thing. You know, Schultz is probably not doing well compared to those guys. And so there's some little staffer over there at MSNBC trying to make his life miserable by leaking all this bull crap. Well, this is one guy that don't believe it, Ed, okay? Don't worry about it, man. I think you got to lie down, take a nap. Let me grab your show for a few weeks, you know.
That'd be bitching if you did that show. I bet you everybody watch it and everything.
I don't know. I doubt it. I don't think that. If I was on MSNBC, I would be fired within 2 days, man. They would blow me out of there. They would be saying things like, oh, gosh. I don't know. Lawrence O'Donnell would probably come in crying. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Now, coming up, Glenn Beck is having a rally on the very spot where Martin Luther King gave his dream speech. And it was pointed out to me by Rance. Al Sharpton has a problem with that because that's hallowed ground. You mean kind of like the mosque going down at Ground Zero, baby? Yeah! We'll have more of that and other stories. Blockbuster is going out of business, man. And more on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I am smiling.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Coming up, we got Bud's Nightly News, Bud Dickman's Nightly News. Which, you want to go get ready for that?
Yeah. I'm going to go and rehearse.
Yeah, you rehearse, man.
That's what I help him rehearse, man.
Hey, man, don't hit the microphone.
Sorry.
Yeah, so Bud Dickman's Nightly News coming up. And this is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Quick news note here. Blockbuster tells Hollywood Studios it's preparing for mid-September bankruptcy. All right. After dominating the home video rental business for more than a decade and struggling to survive in recent years against upstarts Netflix and Redbox, Blockbuster, which ignored the internet and the opportunities there, just like a whole lot of other kinds of businesses, is preparing to file for bankruptcy next month, according to people who've been briefed on the matter and didn't want to be. Most of them executives from Blockbuster and its senior debt holders last week held meetings with these six major movie studios to discuss their intention to enter a pre-planned bankruptcy in mid-September, said several people familiar with the situation who requested anonymity due to the sensitivity of ongoing talks that they might carve a new ass to if they opened their mouths. Blockbuster is hoping to use its time in Chapter 11 to restructure a crippling debt load of nearly $1 billion and escape leases on 500 or more of its 3,425 stores in the U.S. Boy, I'll tell you, I remember when I was in Miami, Wayne Huizenga, who currently owns the Miami Dolphin football team, owned Blockbuster Video. Wayne Huizenga has a business model, and it's this. He rents things. He is the owner of Waste Management, or at least he was. Maybe he doesn't own that anymore. And what did he like about Waste Management? You rent garbage cans. Here's a garbage can. Put your garbage in it. I'll haul it away. You pay me for renting that garbage can. Why did he buy the Miami Dolphins? You rent seats. Here's a seat you can sit your ass in for a certain amount of time on Sunday and watch the football team. And why did he have Blockbuster Video? You can rent the video. He loved the whole idea of renting things. And then he turned around at a certain point, and he sold it to Viacom. And those are the jackballs, I think, that are going belly up with this thing right now, because that's Sumner Redstone. He's a real, oh, isn't he such a genius? Yes, sure. He is. Blockbuster is not here, though. Blockbuster is hoping to reschedule its crippling debt. Good luck. They lost a total of $1.1 billion since the beginning of 2008. They've been severely hamstrung in efforts to grow their business due to interest payments on $920 million in debt. Oh, yeah. Earlier this month, and that's also something that Sirius Satellite, Sirius XM, you know, I shouldn't even bring them up, but they've got like $400 million in debt. In any event, last week, Dallas-based Blockbuster's chief executive, Jim Keyes, came to Los Angeles to hold individual meetings with executives at studios like 20th Century Fox, Paramount Pictures, Sony, Universal, and Warner Brothers. He was joined by a team of restructuring consultants, a bunch of guys in suits who were all saying, you want to go get sushi? Hired to turn around a struggling company, along with the senior debt holders who would likely end up owning a substantial portion of Blockbuster following bankruptcy. Former Sony Pictures Home Entertainment president Ben Feingold, who is serving as an advisor to the debt holders, was present as well, although no one noticed. Though its plans are not yet in stone, people knowledgeable about the discussions said the Blockbuster representatives presented a mid-September bankruptcy as the most likely scenario. It would enter what is known as a pre- who cares? They're going out of business. Netflix kicked their ass. Thank you. Next. That's what happens, man. You got to keep your eye on the ball, man.
Well, I don't know anything about the internet. Nobody wants to go over to Blockbuster, stand in a line 85 miles long, wait for the guy to do the thing, and where's your card, and, you know, go online, man. Canadian police charged three suspected in terror plot. One suspect appeared on Canadian Idol. Wait till you hear this story. This jackass, who is a terror suspect, also appeared on Canadian Idol. Now, that may sound weird to you, but the fact is, it's not as unusual as you might think. People who have been charged with harming this country, either by way of terror or espionage, oftentimes fall in love with America while they're here doing their thing. Now, I know this guy was on Canadian Idol, but what's the difference?
Yeah, right.
See what I'm saying? All right, it's time now, before any further ado, and we'll get back to the Canadian Idol, and we'll get back to a lot of things we're going to get back to, including Doug Danger. Time now, though, for Bud's Nightly News. Bud Dickman now, and here is the Nightly News with Bud Dickman. Go ahead, Bud.
Yeah, Toyota's going to recall 133 Corolla because they're broken. Then a condom was in some soup. Then, in another news, Walmart is going to go to the Supreme Court because they're going to block a gender suit. And another one, yoga is good for you. That's what they said. In another one, Heidi Montag got a G-cup-sized boob. That's in the news.
Now more news with Bud Dickman.
Dancing with the Stars is going to have Bristol Palin. And another one, the stock market is bad. It's bad. And Blagojevich got his brother off.
No, hold on. Blagojevich, brother gets off.
What?
Blagojevich, brother gets in.
Blagojevich, brother gets off. And another one. Is that all the news we got?
Pretty much, yeah.
There's 17 million drunks. I'm Bud Dickman on the news.
Good, Bud.
Thanks. I gotta go, and I think I didn't get enough news.
No, that's fine, man. There's 17 million drunks, huh?
Yeah, that's what the Bud Dickman news.
Okay, 17 million drunks, thanks.
What?
Yeah, man, no, that's okay, man.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
What are you talking about?
No, it's 17 million drunks. I like that. One of these days, though, man, you're going to have to give me the rest of the news story. You know, like 17 million drunks and what else?
What?
There's 17 million people are driving drunk. Driving drunk. All right, so getting back here to our Muslim friend. Guy's there on a Canadian Idol, and basically what he's doing is he's singing on Canadian Idol, and then he's arrested by the Canadian police as an alleged terrorist involved in a conspiracy. The guy's got bomb parts and plans, and they believe, the Canadians did, that they posed a very real and serious threat. One of them, a guy by the name of Khurram Shilar, had appeared on Canadian Idol, a show which is exactly like American Idol. As a matter of fact, we have this bozo singing. I don't know if you're going to want to hear it, but just, you know, in the interest of science.
You look like a fool to me. Tell me why you have to go and make things so complicated. I see the way.
See, he's angry because he can't sing, and he'll never be able to sing, and so he's just going to blow Canada up.
I'd do that.
So anyway, what I was saying is, this is interesting because what is it with these cats, man? Like the guys that pulled off 9/11, they were at a strip bar the night before. And I was telling the story before the show on our video feed that there were Nazi spies caught in the United States in World War II. They were saboteurs who had been landed by a U-boat on the coast of Florida. And these guys planted bomb-making material on the beach. And then they took off into the interior of the United States. I think a couple of them went up to New York. Meanwhile, a very alert Coast Guard sailor had seen them burying this stuff, and he went and got his superiors, and they found this stuff. These dudes, in the process of being here in the United States and supposedly planning sabotage, wound up instead staying for a few nights in a hotel, going out and buying a nice suit. They met some chick. They had some dinner. They forgot all about what they were going to be doing. In fact, one of them turned himself in. He was like, "No, you know, I dig it here too much. I'd rather be in jail here." It happens. Only in America. I'm Phil Hendry. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
I'm Bud Dickman.
Right.
Phil Hendry.
And another one.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we bring on the program here this evening Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier. The story that we're going to be talking about, an interesting story, Rolling Stones, list of the top Beatles songs of all time. Doug, how are you?
Pretty good, Phil, and it's an interesting list that Rolling Stone has compiled. I don't know that I agree with it, but I suppose that that's what makes compiling lists interesting. I am a gay man and a gay journalist, so I look at these things a little bit differently.
Well, before, because I know that you had a different idea of what this list should say. The list, and by the way, as we mentioned, this is the 40th anniversary of Let It Be.
That is correct. The 40th anniversary of the Beatles' final studio album, Let It Be. That was 40 years ago. Rolling Stone decided to release the collector's edition issue, listing the top 100 Beatles songs of all time, and to, I guess, get the readers' appetites for the special issue, Rolling Stone posted a list of the top 10 Beatles songs of all time. And, you know, it's one thing, I think, to whet the appetite of readers so they want to see the top list of all time, but it's another thing to have a list of songs here that not only don't represent the best Beatles music, but in a lot of ways they represent, the bottom of the barrel of what the Beatles did. With a few exceptions,
you know. Bottom of the barrel. All right. Well, number one, Day in the Life.
That's a good song. That's Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and but there are better songs on that album. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was an album that I think was. And I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, so let's just slow down and understand who's talking here. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and that means that if I say to you that Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was the seminal Beatle album, I think the representative Beatle album, I think you, only because of my ability to perceive these things, because I, as a gay man, and as a gay journalist, and again, as we've talked, Phil, the five levels of gay, gay man, a gay journalist, full-on gay, and then you wrap it all up and you got all gay. And
I understand, Doug, but I want to get through this list.
No, but I want to get through the list too, but I'm telling you why it is. Okay, fine. I mean, I
understand. You're a gay man and a gay. I just want to get through the list.
But the reason why I'm telling you that Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is a great album is I'm a gay man and a gay journalist.
Right, right. And you and I understand that. I completely understand that. You're absolutely right, and I get you, and I agree.
You agree, but you're not gay.
No, I'm not gay. You are, but I respect your opinion enough to agree with you. I think that is probably their best album. Number two, I Want to Hold Your Hand.
That's an example of the early Beatles, what they called the mop-top Beatles, the Beatlemania Beatles. That was their first big hit record here in the United States. As a gay man, as a gay journalist, I listen to that, and I feel sad because I know the Beatles were capable of so much better than that. Number three, let me just read them, Phil, because I need to get through this. Number three.
I can do it.
All right. Well, and if you could pick it up a little bit.
Yeah, I will, Doug. I just I'm trying to give you the opportunity to explain it.
Right.
Number three is Sergeant.
That's Sergeant Fields Forever. Strawberry Fields Forever.
Strawberry Fields Forever. Yeah.
But what's Sergeant Fields Forever?
Sergeant Pepper's is what I was thinking of.
Right. Strawberry Fields Forever is an atrocious piece of music. They use a lot of backward masking. They use a lot of that reverse tape effects that became so just stiflingly dull in later recordings that other artists picked up on it. I think Strawberry Fields Forever is an interesting concept, but a slowed down Calliope with reverse tape effects, you are left feeling like you have just been spun around. Your head is spinning. Your stomach is not going to keep whatever food is in it. Sure isn't going to stay in it.
All right, number four is Yesterday.
Yesterday is a lovely ballad. It's been played to death. I'm speaking as a gay man, as a gay journalist, that I think Yesterday, had it not been played into the ground, had it not been played by radio to the point of it became an irritant. And so what was once a great song Yesterday, a beautiful ballad, was destroyed, immolated by radio. Thank you again, radio.
Number five, In My Life.
In My Life, it's from Rubber Soul. Rubber Soul was an interesting concept. It was the Beatles trying to be the Birds. It was the Beatles trying to be folk rock. They blew it badly. They looked ridiculous in those tripticals. In My Life, I think, was John Lennon imagining himself as E.E. Cummings. I'm a gay man. I'm a gay journalist. So this is my, so you know, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. This is my verdict. In My Life is embarrassing.
I got to just say one thing, that you're taking a lot of songs here that a lot of people love, and you're calling In My Life embarrassing.
I'm a gay man. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, Phil.
I understand that. You're calling that embarrassing.
Yes.
Number six, Something.
Something is another one of these songs that could have been great had they not destroyed it by overplaying it on the radio. A song written by George Harrison, one of the few good ones that George Harrison wrote. Because George Harrison wrote a lot of songs, even though most of them, I'd say 99% of them, were horrible, the Beatles had to put them on albums. Otherwise, George was going to have a hissy fit, quit. In other words, George was going to do what I guess Paul McCartney eventually did. So they had to include a lot of George Harrison's music. And as I said, a lot of it is almost unlistenable. Something is a good little commercial vehicle. It's a good little song. It's got legs. I like it. It's sweet. I can't listen to it anymore because it's been overplayed, but at one time, it was a good song.
All right, number seven, Hey Jude.
Horrible song. Repetitive, redundant, 8 minutes of living torment for anyone that's ever heard it. The melody starts out nice enough, but then it's just la-da-da-da-da-da-da. I don't have to be a gay man and a gay journalist to tell you that's the kind of thing that could drive anybody mad. I mean, literally drive you mad. And by that, I mean insane. As a gay man and as a gay journalist, I think I speak for everyone, straight and gay. And I give, in fact, Hey Jude, I give two gay thumbs down to, and I haven't given any gay thumbs down to any material on this list yet.
But why is that?
It doesn't even qualify as a gay thumb.
The material.
Right.
Number seven, number eight, Let It Be.
Let It Be was the Beatles attempting to copy Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Waters, and the Troubled Waters was the Beatles. The bridge was Simon and Garfunkel. I think Simon and Garfunkel's beautiful album, Bridge Over Troubled Waters, with The Boxer and with these other songs, but the Beatles trying to do what they did, it was bad. So, yeah, I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I say that was the Beatles trying to be Simon and Garfunkel, just like In My Life was the Beatles trying to be the Birds.
All right, and then we have number 10, While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Another George Harrison abomination, a horrible song, a song that, first of all, Harrison can't sing, he can't play guitar, he hung out with Eric Clapton hoping it would rub off, no it didn't, and the end result was having to sit through Harrison's music. Now,
did George Harrison wrote something?
Okay, yeah, he wrote something. Next.
He wrote that one from,
what?
Hey, Doug, easy, okay?
I'm just telling you, I'm a gay man and a gay...
I know you're a gay man, and he wrote that Within You and Without You from,
Are you kidding me? That's that Hindu? That was a... Get out of here with that shit. No, that song's terrible.
So you give this list, as compiled by Rolling Stone...
I give it three gay thumbs down. I give it two gay thumbs up, which comes out to one gay thumb down. And I would say that is devastating. I usually never give a gay thumb down. If I give one gay thumb down, it is devastating. I mean, the landscape is flattened.
All right, so you give it a gay thumb down.
No, I give it three gay thumbs down, two gay thumbs up.
Which equals one gay thumb down.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, but you don't say it that way.
All right, three gay thumbs down and two gay thumbs up for this list of the Beatles' top songs in the opinion of Rolling Stone, but not of Doug Danger. Now, Doug, I know you do have your pick for the best Beatles song of all time.
I absolutely do, Phil, and I think nothing says the sense of fun that the Beatles had with music. Here is a day in the life, and again, let's listen to this very morose, very depressive song by John Lennon. It's about a guy sitting in a car wanting to blow his brains out. Whoopee-doo. This song.
About a lucky man who made the grave.
Well, all right.
So this song is it's typical Lennon. Just typical Lennon, very depressing. But the Beatles had a sense of fun and had a... Can you turn that off now? Can you turn that...
Turn it off, bud.
Yeah, okay. I just kind of like it.
Yeah. Would you have him...
Turn it off, bud.
Yeah, I can't listen to that. All right. But the sense of fun is what's missing from this list. The Beatles were fun. If there was something you could say about the Beatles... And I'm saying this as a gay man and a gay journalist, so you can take this to the bank... You can night deposit it. You can put it into a money market. You can do whatever you want with it. This is the truth. The Beatles were fun. The Beatles were fun and just loved to hop around and frolic. And we don't get a sense of the frolicking fun of the Beatles until we hear a song that I think is absolutely...
Get that... Turn it off, bud. I told you, okay?
I'm telling you, someone's trying to piss me off.
No, he forgot to turn it off.
Sorry.
God. You laughing?
No, I'm not, man. I swear.
Man, if you're laughing at me...
I'm not laughing, I swear.
All right. As a gay man and as a gay journalist, I, Doug Danger, I give this Beatles song... I give it four gay thumbs up and two gay thumbs down. That's a total of two gay thumbs. A gay thumb up.
It's two gay thumbs.
No, two gay thumbs. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. Two gay thumb.
Yeah.
Okay, here it is. Doug Danger's number one Beatles song of all time.
In the town where I was born.
Isn't this fun?
This song sucks.
But sailed to sea.
What was that?
Nothing, I swear.
Man, what's the stupidest song I ever heard?
Would you tell that to shut up, man? This is my segment, isn't it?
Yes, it's your segment.
To the sun, till we bound. To the front stream. I'm Doug Danger. And this has been Doug Danger's top Beatles song of all time. Four gay thumb up. I'd give it six gay thumb up, but no one has six fingers.
In a yellow submarine.
I hate this.
Yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine.
Oh my God.
What are you laughing about?
I'm laughing at that whole segment, man. It's the stupidest thing I ever heard in my life. I'm giving it four gay thumb up.
Begins to play.
He's going to call back and say you're homophobic.
Oh, ooh. I'm so scared.
We all live in the yellow submarine.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back with a wrap on the show, man.
We all live in a yellow submarine.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yellow submarine.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry
Show.
Yeah,
bud. Thank you, bud. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. You know, don't go yelling, man, before I'm even on the air.
Yeah, but you didn't read this. It's interesting.
Okay, great, man, but the microphone was barely open, and you're like,
you're gonna yell, yell, yell. You do that all the time, man.
Well, yeah, but don't you forget?
Sometimes I forget, yeah, but here's the way you remind me, okay? You ready?
Yeah.
You write it down on a piece of paper and hold it up in front of me so that nobody in the audience hears you screaming at me.
Just write it down on that, man.
What, with a crayon or something?
A crayon, man? Write it down with a piece of paper. Hey, you know, you write down fat lady story. Do it.
Okay.
Don't go, hey, don't forget the fat lady story. 603-pound Thai woman leaves home after 3 years via a forklift. Dateline Bangkok.
Man.
How come it's always a forklift, a crane? I'll tell you why it's always a forklift or a crane. Because it's 603 pounds, that's why. And let me tell you one other thing, too. She may have had a thyroid problem. This is very real. It's very true that people have thyroid problems, and they put on weight. You don't get up to 603 pounds without somebody working a full-time kitchen, man, on your behalf. Now, I think I told you guys about the TV show we saw, right? And we often use, as a matter of fact, one of our drops comes from that TV show, that guy Larry. And he's a very, very overweight guy. I mean, he's approaching 1,000 pounds. Now, that's not the story. Those stories we've seen and those poor people, for whatever reason, and I think it's I personally believe it's a delusional problem the way anorexia is. You know how anorexia, a girl is thin and she sees herself as overweight, right?
Yeah, that's weird.
Okay. A girl that has anorexia could eat an olive, just an olive. And she might look in the mirror and see the weight that she put on from that olive.
Man.
I mean, that's how weird, that's how tragic this illness is. I got a feeling that the problem here with these guys that are way, way overweight is the reverse of that, but still equally delusional. That they see there's this big fat guy in the mirror, and maybe they look underweight, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. A guy laying around eating a fried pork sausage. And that one guy eating six of them.
Yeah, six fried pork sausages this guy ate. Now, here's the part that is really goofy. And this lady here that we're talking about, she's 40 years of age. She's got one of those long Thai names that I can't pronounce, Tong Prapai or something.
Tong Prapai.
Yeah, T-O-N-G-P-R-A-P-A-I.
Tong, yeah. Yeah, let me see it.
Bud, you don't know how to pronounce that. Get out of here. Anyway, contacted the Bangkok Metropolitan Authority when they learned she needed medical attention to remove a tumor in her right leg. Bangkok's media-savvy governor summoned camera crews to document the event, which involved engineers, demolition crews, rescue workers, doctors, and nurses. Gee, thanks a lot, Mr. Governor, sir. She could only walk a few feet on her own anyway. As neighbors cheered on the pavement, she smiled and flashed a V for victory sign as she was lowered from the apartment.
What does that mean? Like, hey, I got out of my apartment for the first time.
Yay. Yeah, they're all cheering. Yeah, that's it, baby. You're going out for a walk. All right. Now, here's the thing. This lady, I don't know, but here it says here, she was confined to her studio apartment where she ran a laundry service with the help of her two adopted sons. She ran a laundry service. That's how she made money. She had okay. This guy that we were talking about, that Larry guy, right?
Yeah, six fried pork sausages.
Right. That's what he eats. That's just part of what he has for breakfast. If you saw this show, you would just you'd be amazed, because not only is he shoveling it down morning, noon, and night, 24 hours a day, but when you see that his father and his stepmother, that means a woman married a man, and what did she marry into? Working in a kitchen 24 hours to keep a fat man alive who lays in a bed upstairs, and that's it. So, in other words, this guy Larry is he's like a cottage industry or something. The only problem is nobody's making any money except for the cats at the who make the food.
Yeah, I bet you that guy eats so much food he keeps several farms working 24 hours.
Probably.
Yeah, I like if that guy have six fried pork sausages and all them eggs. How many eggs do you think he have?
That guy has two cartons of eggs for breakfast.
Get out of here. That's like 24 eggs.
Yeah, that's what he has. 24 eggs, man. Where is it? Fried pork. There we go. Listen to this, man. You'll love it.
Eight fried pork sausages, six fried eggs.
This is what he has for breakfast.
Eight fried pork sausages, six fried eggs, two large plates of French fries, 10 slices of fried bread, two ham and cheese bagels, eight steaks, four portions of rice, 10 cakes, one portion of spaghetti bolognese, 6 potatoes, 2 large cups of tea, each with 7 sugars, 1 gallon of fresh orange juice, and 1 quart of punch. A total of 14,349 calories.
That's just for breakfast.
No. No, no.
That's for, I'm telling you, man, that's one meal. That's one meal.
I believe it, man. Because I saw the guy you're talking about.
Yeah. Now, his father and his stepmother, this is the part that I was amazed at. Because it's not just the dad. And the father was smiling, and they got this big kitchen. And I'm telling you, it's like a 24-hour, it's like they're operating a kitchen for a factory. It's like they're operating a kitchen for a ship, you know, a military ship or something. They're just all the time. They got eggs frying here and that. Then they came out. Now, here's the thing that was very, very telling. They said to the guy, oh, boy, Larry, we can't move the food in there for you because the table broke. They did that on purpose just to see what he'd do. All of a sudden, with the oxygen tube in his nose, oh, he's laying in bed? No, he gets up and he almost dances out of the bedroom to where the food is.
So he's lying?
No, I don't think he's lying. He just, oh, if it's a difference between not eating and having to get up and walk. Phil Henry Show, produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is Charles Wagon. And, of course, our screener, associate producer, Dan Northcraft. Our web address is philhenryshow.com. That's the right arm of the Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Later, greater.
Six-pack pork sausages.
Phil Henry.